Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Ryan, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Hey, we've got a guest online with us today, calling in remotely, and it's Stephen Roswarski, and he is the Vice President of Sales and Marketing with Rogo Ag. But before we introduce him any further, as always, he's got the question of the day that he has to deal with.
All right, Stephen, good luck.
Stephen, your first question is, tell us, what was the worst and lowest paying job that you ever had, and were they the same?
That is such an interesting question. No, they were not the same. That's the first. I'll answer the end of it first.
Okay.
The lowest paying job that I ever had was an unpaid internship. Course, when I was 19, I kept badgering an advertising agency to let me come and work there while I was in college at Purdue and an advertising major. And so they finally, you know, let this kid come and work for them for, you know, no pay for a while. And
that'd be nice. How many of them can we get?
Right. Are you open? Still?
No, I'm not open for that anymore. I have 8 children. I can't really do the unpaid thing anymore. Gotcha. So. But yeah, that was great. That was a great experience. That I ended up working there for the next 4 years. Oh. And they started paying me after 6 months, which was nice. And you know, back in the 90s, if I'm dating myself, you know, I think my starting wage was $5 an hour. So it was great. It was a great experience. It really kicked off my career. Got me a great job when I got out of college. But the worst job by far that I ever did was on my buddy's chicken farm, pulling chickens and putting them in cages for the truck. And if you'd all ever done, it's a dirty, smelly, nasty experience. And I think I did it for 2 days, like I told him I would, and get this truck filled. And then that was it. I was never going back there. So
if you get the chance, skip it.
Please do not do that unless you have a chicken farm. Yeah. And if you ever want to eat chicken again, I would suggest you don't do that either.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That would be a long day. Ryan, what is yours?
So I guess mine's the same. And I don't know that I've ever had what I would consider a worse job. I've always seemed to enjoy everything I've ever been involved in. But I did get hired one time for a guy. It's funny. It was hauling manure, but they provided the spreaders. They wanted somebody to provide the tractor. So my dad said, well, yeah, go take one. If you're going to get paid to do it, go ahead. Well, anyway, So we went, and we ended up pulling these things on the road a lot. So, I mean, it was a ton of diesel fuel, and it was hard on tires. And I broke an apron chain, and so at about 3/4 of a load. So then it all had to be shoveled off. This is dry, not liquid manure. So we had to shovel it off to get to that apron chain to where we could get everything put back together so it would continue to unload on its own. And I don't remember that we did this for, like, maybe 5 or 6 days straight. I mean, we ran hard for 5 or 6 days, maybe over spring break one year, before we started planting crops. And, anyway, the end of that week we got done, we unhooked, and, he handed us all each $100 bill.
No.
Sent us on our way.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So I guess that would all be the same. But, and I did not necessarily enjoy the job, but, I thought that it was for the pay, it could have been better. So,
jeez.
I mean, it would have been light probably had it been his tractor too, but, the amount of diesel fuel and, tire wear and tear we put on them, it was for $100, even 30 years ago, that was a little light.
Yeah. That's rough.
What you got, Sal?
Well, mine is, it's kind of the same instance. Mine was the worst and, lowest pay. And it's not, we all put up a lot of hay probably when we were kids and straw and picked up rock and that was all fine. I enjoyed all that. But this time, I'd never put up hay for this guy before, and, I won't mention names, but, I rode my bike over there, and I was probably in 7th grade or 8th grade at the time. So I rode my 10 speed over there. And it was for $2.50 an hour, which I didn't know until after the day was over. generally the lowest was $3.50 an hour, and he didn't have hay wagons. He had pickup trucks to put it in. And I was the biggest help that was there. The rest of them was all kids, little kids, and the hay was wet, and I worked that day like a dog. Those hay bales must have been 80, 90 pounds apiece. And, I mean, I'd have to unload the pickup trucks and then go up in the loft to stack them. And while everybody else kind of just sat around and did that, I didn't go back for day two.
No?
No. I figured they could gang up and do it themselves.
Well, but, what he didn't tell you, second day, you got to be supervised.
There you go.
You That's missed right. out on your yeah. first opportunity at management.
But that was it. It was only that day. So that was pretty good.
All right.
All right. Well,
Stephen, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me, guys. I really do appreciate the opportunity. And yeah, whenever we can talk about technology and talk about moving the industry forward, I mean, that's what we're all about. So thanks for the invitation.
Well, give us a little insight to you and family and personal stuff, and then just jump right into telling us what Rogo Ag is.
Sure, sure. So I am a father to 8 children. I've been married now to my wife for way long time. We're all up here in Lafayette, Indiana. I have the 3 older kids, the 3 middle kids, and the twins. So our 3 older kids are either married or engaged, and we actually have 1 grandbaby and 2 more grandbabies on the way, so we're excited about that. And then all the way down to I have twin girls that are 8, so we run the gamut.
Wow.
Honestly, yeah. So amazing, fun family times whenever we can all get together. So that's my story up here. I went to Purdue for my education, didn't have an agricultural education, had a communications degree, and actually fell into agriculture when I was in job number 2, and ended up starting a company, my own company, and running that for 12 years called Ag Printers. And that was, we did a lot of the seed catalogs for a lot of the independent companies way back before all of the biotech companies started buying them out. So that was a great business for 12 years. And I sold that and have really kind of tried to be back in agriculture as much as possible. I really have enjoyed it. I love the industry. I love the humility that there is in agriculture. Everybody understands they can't make it rain, and they know who does. So that makes my life a lot richer when I'm dealing with people like that, that are the salt of the earth and understand that they don't control everything in their business. And so I've really enjoyed that. I've been with Rogo now for almost 3 years. They brought me on. I've dated myself already, but you know, I'm the old guy at the shop, and they brought me on because of the youth that was there, and the ownership, and really, you know, the board decided they needed someone to come on and bring maturity, someone who's scaled a business before, someone who understands, you know, the face-to-face and handshake nature of agriculture. And, I've just really been able to, you know, slide into that role and try to push them forward on that. And if the numbers are any indication, I think we're going in the right direction.
Well, Stephen, tell us about Rogo Ag. Well, tell us about when it started and kind of what Rogo's primary mission's about.
Sure. So what a lot of people, what I love to tell people about Rogo is Rogo was started by and is still owned by a farming family in Indiana. So unlike a lot of the tech startups, you know, that are out there, that go out and they get a lot of venture cap money and they raise in millions of dollars to try to scale up really fast, that's not who Rogo is. We are still owned by the Fichter family. They farm up in the Keystone, Bluffton, Indiana area. And this all started on their farm. So this all started because of a poor experience that Troy had with a soil sampling event. And so Troy had gone off to college at Purdue. He has a mechanical engineering degree. He came home from school to work on the farm, and he was put in charge of fertility. So they have a 6,500 acre operation between him and his brother, dad's uncles. And he was responsible for that. So there was a sampling event, came out. There was some really weird results that came back from the lab. So he, of course, questioned those results. Long story short, once they ran down what had happened, there was just an egregious error. And it ended up that the intern that was hired to come out and sample one day admitted that he was tired. It was the end of the week. It was hot. And he just took a bunch of dirt from the ditch and put it in a bag.
So,
thankful. I'm more thankful to that young man than you can imagine, because that gave us a company and a job. And so, you know, Troy's thought from there was, I'm either going to create something that not only is accurate, but is 100% accountable, or I'm just going to quit soil sampling altogether because there's just no reliability to it. And so that was in 2017 when he started that mission. So since then, you know, 9, 10, probably 11 iterations now of the robot. We were fully commercialized in 2022, I want to say. I would say fully commercialized then. And we now have a fleet of 24 robots, and we've done over 2 million acres across 19 different states, and home is still Indiana. But like I said, we're deployed today. I know that we're in Mississippi, Nebraska, and probably Idaho right now sampling, as well as all over the Midwest here in Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. So that's how everything started.
Nice. So you dig deeper into what the robot sampling is. What do people expect to see from a machine standpoint?
Sure. So from a machine standpoint, our first machines were actually on Bobcat skid steer chassis. So if you can imagine the kind of the Bobcats that you didn't sit in, you just kind of walked behind, you know. And those first original ones, they did everything. They did all of the pulling, all of the driving, all of the bagging, everything. And we found out over time that they were A, too slow, and B, too heavy. We have switched a few years ago. We switched to mounting a robot apparatus on the side of a Kubota side by side. Now, here's the key thing is everybody's like, oh yeah, you know, I've seen other machines that are mounted to the side of a UTV. Totally different things that are going on there. And the reason I say that is because there are other machines out there that have hydraulic, you know, probes on them or electric probes on them. And they're set to a depth and they're set on a track, right? So they set this depth to 7 inches, let's say. But the issue is that when those probes hit the ground, depending on the hardness of the ground and depending on the stiffness of that suspension on that machine, it's going to lift up. And that depth doesn't get changed. It just goes down that track, that 7 inches, and how when it gets to the bottom of the track, it stops. So what we own these machines too. Like we've went out and done all this testing, of course, as you can imagine. Our machine works differently because our machine has a pressure plate that comes down on the side with 3,000 pounds of pressure that basically pinches everything down in that soil. And then the probe that we have that we custom designed, and we can talk about that. I'd like to talk about that. That probe goes through the middle of that plate and it ground references off the bottom of that plate every single time. So where we've seen and where other people have tested us, where they've seen average depth variance of 1 to 2 inches on anything they've been doing, either by hand or by machine, our average depth variance, and I'm talking about average across every field, let's just say every field in fall of 2023, which would have been 571,000 acres of fields, our average depth variance was 3 millimeters. That's 1/8 of an inch.
Wow.
And we can chart everything and we can record it all too. So that's what people need to know too, is that I can pull up my computer right now. I can pull up my software. I can see where every one of my 24 robots is right now in real time. And I can see every path that they've taken through every field over the last 2 years, every single point location that they hit within a foot or two, and every single depth that we attained. So it is an incredible amount of data and everything is provable and accountable. And that was the big thing is because guys, you know, I want you to hear this too. We have the utmost respect for anybody that goes out and samples. Like everybody's been doing this for a long time. They've been doing it by hand and everybody's trying to do their very best job. And they just never had this level of accuracy or accountability before. And, you know, when I went out with a hand probe, which, by the way, hand probes are the next most accurate way to do sampling other than our robot. But if I went out with a hand probe and I said, hey, I hit every depth exactly right. I had a, you know, I put a washer on it. You know, I knew right where I was going to hit. And I looked at every core and I measured every core with a tape measure. And I made sure it was 7 inches. You could still look at me and say, prove it. And I would not be able to do that. And, you know, that's what this all comes down to. It's not just, can you create something that you know is accurate? Can you prove that it is accurate? And we can. And I think that's the beauty of it all. And you're going to ask me a question at the end. Don't forget to ask me about what's coming next, because there's even a further validation that we're working on right now that's incredible.
Well, you've answered a lot of the questions that I had kind of in my mind as you were talking. You would kind of answer the next one about, you know, what makes robotic sampling better than kind of traditional sampling. And I think you've told us it takes out a lot of the human error. Man, maybe not even human error, but some of the environmental error, you know, whenever the ground is hard. And I know with our hydraulic probe samples, you know, it does matter if the ground's hard. I mean, it can push the machine up. And so, yeah, it's we'll put up some videos and definitely some pictures of the actual probe. And cause it would be neat for you to kind of explain and show how that pinches the ground to secure the plate to the soil so that it doesn't push up, you know, puts that pressure down there on it.
Right. One of the things you said, I mean, some very interesting things too, Sal, is that, you know, we originally started out with augers and, you know, we were convinced that augers were the way to go, because when you look down in the hole, when you make an auger hole, it's a perfect hole every single time. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was our thought. But what I want everybody to hear is that we're constantly testing our own theories. I mean, imagine, we're so blessed that we are a company that all we do is soil sample. I mean, think about all of your business, Sal, and like how many different things you guys have to do on a daily. Like, soil sampling is 1/100th of what you guys do. And we spend all of our days and nights figuring out how close can we get to perfection, right? So we had this, you know, Troy, I'm going to say Troy, because he is the brains behind this entire thing as far as engineering goes. You know, he really had a come to Jesus moment of, hey, I don't think that augers are as accurate as they are, because as he tested everything, he found that augers will cave at the top. They'll cave the soil in at the top as you're going in. And so, you know, you're going to get more of that top 2 inches of soil, and that's going to mess with your results, because that's where all the fertilizer is, right? So you're going to get higher results than you need, than you really are true. So he went back and said, all right, well, I'm going to have to create a soil extraction system unlike anything else. So he purchased, like I said, the different types of equipment that are out there now. He, you know, had a lot of hand probes, and he looked at everything from his Purdue engineering mind, not necessarily from agronomics. You know, he wanted to say, how do I get the perfect core? And what he found was all of these things that are out there, they all do something very, very well, right? One thing they'll do well, but there's always something that they struggle with. And so what he found was most of it has to do with soil flow, right? And static friction. So inside of the probe, you know, he built ways, and I can't really get into it too much, but basically he made modifications to a probe that allows the soil flow to start immediately and to continue until that probe is full. So that is the whole key. And then the other thing is how do you keep soil from falling out? So that's the other thing, because as you know, I mean, we're across a lot of different states, right? We do a lot of stuff in Michigan, and really, really proud of the fact that we can do some really expensive ground up there that people like Nestle and Gerber Baby Foods use. You know, I mean, it's important that we get that right. Well, the soil is pretty sandy, and you guys have that down there too, and the river bottoms and stuff is pretty sandy. So we were at one point about a year ago found out that, hey, when we're pulling that probe up through that bucket, we can't lose any of the bottom part of that. Like, you know, just as important it is to have the top perfect, it's important to have the bottom perfect too. So we actually looked at things like that. And then we created this trap door system that doesn't allow any, as that probe comes up through that bucket, a trap door slams shut and it doesn't allow any of the soil at all to fall out of the bottom. So there's just these great engineering things that I'm not an engineer, and I get a little bit giddy when I think about, man, you guys are so smart. Like, wow. Like, how did you think of that? And then how did you implement it? So yes, this is a very, very, very different soil extraction system than anything that's ever been created out there. Does that make sense?
Sure.
It sure does. I don't think we kind of jumped into this. We've had other podcasts where we talk about why we soil sample, but that is foundational to what we try to do. I mean, you can't even start your crop plan until you know what the nutrient resources are in the soil. I mean, we used to years ago, but until you know where you're starting from, you can't really make an educated application of crop nutrients for the crop. And so,
the earlier in that process of fertility, the more important it is to be accurate. So, and I always like to tell people that, like, if we think about the whole fertility process from map creation, soil collection, lab analysis, rec creation, and application, you know, a lot of people will say, hey, we know that ROGO is more accurate than anything. Nobody argues with us on the fact that they know we're more accurate. But a lot of people will get into the argument of, well, our machines, you know, our applicators aren't that accurate, or, you know, we haven't caught up with technology on the spreading and spraying side. And my point to them is, yeah, but if you're off a little bit at application, that isn't a very big variance. But if you're off at soil collection, your rec could have huge variations in how much you're applying and where you're going to apply it. So, you know, let's be right. Let's control the controllables, and let's be right as close to the beginning of the process as possible. And then the other thing, Sal, is that if you look at that, all of those things that I just mentioned in the process, which one of those hasn't changed much over 50 years? And the only thing that hasn't changed in all of that is soil collection. I mean, maps have changed quite a bit. Your rec software has changed quite a bit. The labs, it doesn't matter which lab you're using out there, they'll all claim to have about a 2.5% error rate. And that's amazing, right? I mean, that's very, very low. And then you get to the applicators, and yeah, we have See and Spray technology now. We have all these things out there. So the only improvement that remained to be made was in soil collection. And so that's really what we wanted to focus in on, and it's absolutely incredible how far we've been able to come in a very short time.
Very good. Hey, when you're talking about the core and how well you do with the core, how are you identifying where to pull that core, and how are you getting there?
Okay. Oh, and I lost you a little bit there, Ryan. You said how do we decide where to get that core?
Yep. How are you setting up your points and explain how your machine gets there?
Sure. So this is a beautiful part is, you know, we're not agronomists. We rely on all of our customers to, you know, give us the maps that they need to get things done. So if it's grids or zones, it doesn't really matter, you know, to us. All of the maps and all the points are usually provided by our customers. We love to have the historical points because we want to hit the exact same spot every single time when we go out there year over year, so you can trend that data. But one cool way that this robot works too, and this is another beautiful aspect of it, is our operators, when they go out to a field, they don't type in anything into that robot as far as a spec. All of that data that we get from you guys, and you guys are using Fieldalytics, right, for your guys' maps points. So we have APIs built with several softwares. One of them is Fieldalytics, right? So the API, when you guys are in there entering a field, now all you have to do when you create a sample event is choose ROGO inside of Fieldalytics, and that data flows right into our system, right to the robot. So when an operator gets to a field, all they have to do is get the robot off the truck and pull the robot into the field boundary. Once that robot is inside the field boundary, all of your specs are automatically loaded into that. So that operator doesn't need to know if they're sampling one side of the road at 2.5 acre grids at 7 inches deep with 8 cores and go across the other side of the road and they're sampling on a 2 acre zone with 25 cores. Like they don't know and they don't need to because the robot does all of that for them. And that's one of the most incredible ways that we have found to take all of the human error out of it.
So that's a couple questions, Stephen. Does the operator, does he ride with the machine while it's out there? Does he kind of drive it to the points or does it have auto steer?
This is a great question. So we put someone in that machine and they have two jobs. All they're doing is bagging soil. So they're responsible as the bucket comes up and they grab a bag that's QR coded and they scan the bag with our QR reader and they use the funnel to put the dirt in the bag. That's the, and then put it in the box as they're riding. They do not drive that machine. That machine totally drives itself. So I'm talking about steering, gas, brakes, everything. Everything is driven automatically. So it truly is autonomous when it's out there. The other thing that they're doing, however, and we found very necessary, is that they're watching. I don't know if y'all remember this or know this, but not all of your maps are accurate, just so you know. So there's some unmarked waterways. We don't want to run into tile risers. And the other beauty, you know, we don't want to sample in mud puddles, right? So if you have a point that is in a mud puddle, we're going to physically move that point, and they have the ability to do that in the robot, digitally move that point. And then the other beauty is with all these APIs that we have, like that API is an end-to-end API. So if we move a point while we're in a field, that data automatically goes back into your system in Fieldalytics, so that you have an accurate map of where the points were actually taken. So yeah, that's a beautiful part of our system. The other thing that we have too, that has really, you know, let me put it this way, and I always love to point this out. It doesn't matter if you have the most amazing invention in the world, if you don't have an easy way for your customers to use it. So if you don't have a positive customer experience, you will not succeed. And so one of the big things that, you know, one of my big goals when I started a few years ago was, hey, I believe in what you guys are doing. I believe the concept. We need to create it so that the customers are having a beautiful, wonderful, easy experience. So some of the things that came out of that were a lot of customer discussions on, hey, what would make it easier? That's where the APIs came out of, number one. So that's why we've spent a lot of time creating those. But the other thing was really just revolved around the ease of entering jobs and then the communication process throughout the sampling season. And so what we have done is we've created several different notification systems, and our customers absolutely love them. So the first one is a notification when you enter a job into the system, because that validates, hey, we've received that, right? So let's make sure it's in the system. Then we created a end of field notification, basically. So when that operator is done with the field and they're on their screen, they hit end mission, a few things happen. We have an in-cab printer. So that printer will print out a manifest for whatever lab it's going to. By the way, you guys choose the lab. We're lab agnostic. It doesn't really matter to us. We're connected with all of them. So we're good. But then it also kicks out a label, a shipping label to put on that for FedEx or UPS, depending on who we're using. The other beautiful part, though, is that when they hit end mission, the customer actually gets an email within a minute that says that that field is done. So from the standpoint of fall sampling, people are crazy in love with that notification because everybody's trying to get things done and get things spread. I'm going to rip the field. I mean, this gives them that in a very timely manner. A new notification that we just built for this fall, we beta tested it and it worked amazingly and now it's in full use, is our next field notification. So that was one of the big things with our customers. They were like, hey, we really want to see your schedule. And I'm like, you can't see the schedule for two reasons. One is if I show you the schedule, you see everybody and everybody sees you. So I don't think you want your competitors seeing, you know, your fields on the screen. And the second thing was, is as fast as we make the schedule, it changes. You know, you can go out and the field is marked ready. You get there and it's not harvested, or you get there and the gate's locked. And so, right. So it's constantly flowing. So what we did is we created a next field notification. And this is so cool because when that operator is in the cab and they hit end mission, then the next mission will come up on their screen and they have to accept that mission. So when they hit the accept button, we've now created a text message that will go to either you guys or directly to your grower if you choose. And it says, Rogo is on its way to sample, you know, Billy's Back 40. It'll have the name of the field on behalf of Premier Ag, and they will arrive in the next 17 minutes or based on wherever they're at, GPS to GPS. So, you know, if you guys get these notifications from your HVAC companies or whatever, you know, like I do, like, hey, so-and-so is going to be at your house in 20 minutes. That's what we've created. And our customers absolutely have just over the moon about this because we have eliminated a lot of the, you know, cousins, neighbors, uncle coming out and stopping us in the field because we're, you know, doing donuts in his field or something that they don't know we're out there sampling.
What are you guys doing?
And we sample at night too. So, you know, we work 6 days a week. We don't work on Sundays and we work 15-hour days. So they're long days. And we are a very safety conscious company. So we have strobes and we have really high powered LEDs. So yeah, if I'm out in the middle of a field, if an operator's out there, you're going to know it. It's going to look like a UFO out there, you know, sampling. But we also want to prevent our operators being stopped because, of course, that slows down everything. We've had quite a few instances of people threatening with firearms, which, you know, happens from time to time. But we've also taught all of our operators part of their training is actually how to de-escalate situations when you're stopped. So we've had a lot of experience with this over the time period. And I think that this new notification is probably going to eliminate a great deal of those stops.
All right. Well, it's very impressive for sure. It sounds like the response from growers has been really good. And you got a couple million acres under your belt. So that's for sure a good sign that things are on the right path. So what is next coming down the pipeline?
Sure. So, and I'm going to be really careful with this one just because, you know, everything that's in development is still in development. And until they tell the sales guys that they can actually say something,
so this is where the sales, this is where the sales guy over promises, right?
Exactly. So here's what I can, I'll try to whet your appetite here a little bit. So as you know, our goal is to have 100% validation of our process all the way through, right? So the last piece of that puzzle is validating every core as it comes up. So if you can imagine the ability to see/scan every single core as it's coming up to make sure that it's full, make sure that, you know, you can see different things as far as, I gotta be careful. It's going to validate every part of the process so that there is zero doubt left. And it's going to allow us to do more things in the side of, you know, not just fertility, but also carbon, bulk density, all of those things. Because as you can imagine, I know we didn't talk about carbon and stuff on here, but there's a lot of carbon talk out there. And you can imagine that every single major carbon company has contacted us at some point because they have to do sampling and there's just no scalable way for them to do that. And we can. Good. So that's nice. A whole nother side of the business that's interesting down the pike. What else do we see? We see a major geographic expansion for us. And the reason that I say that is because in 2023, we really perfected how to scale our company. And we were able to do acres in Idaho on a 5-day turn or acres in Indiana on a 5-day turn. Like everything is the max of a 5-day turn. So it didn't matter where the acres were. We were able to do everything. And we're, like I said, we're in Mississippi right now. We picked up a bunch of business in Nebraska. We just hired a new territory manager who lives in Kansas City, who's going to handle the West. And it's just, it's a really exciting time for Rogo right now.
Wow. Sounds great.
It is.
Sounds great. I've seen a demonstration in the field, and it is such impressive technology. So, anything else you want to add?
Well, I would add this. One of the discussions that we always get around, and this is really out to your growers, okay? And I want them to hear this, is everything revolves around ROI, everything. And I think that for so long, we haven't really been able to get a very valid argument for ROI on some of the processes that we do. And the ROI that we've come up with on Rogo is so easy to understand and so significant that whenever I'm able to talk to growers, like you guys know this, like we don't sell to growers, we sell through our retailer partners and our farm service providers and consultants. But we are asked to go speak to growers. We're asked to present at 4R events and trade shows. And when I can talk to the grower about the fact that if you guys, if paying for Rogo through Premier costs them a couple extra dollars than everybody else, and I don't know what that situation is, but even if it did, and because of commodity prices being where they're at, and because of, you know, the cost of PK and lime, we've come up with the fact that the grower would only need to see a 0.5% yield gain once in a 4-year period in order to pay for the added cost of Rogo. So when growers hear that, they're like, why aren't we doing this? And it's just because, guys, you know, it's taken time for Rogo to educate our customers. And I know Premier has been really great because you allowed me to come down and speak to all of your sales team and give them the narrative of here's how you talk to a grower. So I guess I would just appeal to all the growers that are listening to this out there is you need to know the name Rogo, and you need to request Rogo to your sales team. And I think that would just be my kind of my mantra for the day is remember that we're owned by a grower family. And our whole goal is to really be, and what I like to say, the auto steer of soil sampling, right? So auto steers on red tractors, green tractors, yellow tractors, right? Because it's right for the industry. And I just have my hats off to Premier for, you know, you guys and your forward thinking and being at the beginning of this and really, you know, adopting our system and allowing us to come in and help your growers. So thank you guys so much for allowing us to do that, because you have really, really adopted this well and have been communicating it well. And your sales team is incredible. So
yeah, well, we're a farmer-owned cooperative, and if it's good for the grower, it's ultimately going to be good for us. So that's how we look at things. Ryan, do you have anything else?
I don't.
Steven,
thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Steven.
Thanks.
And we'll look forward to seeing you again down here at Premier Ag. Well, that wraps up another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Ag. Steven, you have a good day. Ryan, we'll see you later.
All right, thanks.